If you're considering retiring and selling your practice or might be looking to bring on a partner, you'll need to know what your practice is worth. Today, we're speaking with a valuation expert who will explain where your effort and funds are best spent and how to properly determine the value of your practice. Stay with us. Welcome to another episode of Ortho Thrive. I'm your host, Richie Gerzon. Today, we have Chris Benson joining us. Chris serves as a partner of Benson Koppel and Associates. Chris has been working with orthodontists regarding the business aspects of their practices for over 30 years. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Richie. Great to be part of your show. And I've enjoyed watching a lot of what you've already produced. So good to be adding some content with you today.
Yeah, I think this will be a really fun topic. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about your career and how you got where you are?
Yeah, so like you said, a long time in ortho. I just turned 60. I spent 32 years in the orthodontic space. Yeah, so rocked out of the practice management cradle in Atlanta. Was early on when there was just, not even Windows, there was just DOS and mini computers. And so
I remember that in school. Yeah, right.
So we were backing up stuff on green screens and floppy disk. And so that was fun because nobody had a computer in orthodontics. And so it was all new. That market kind of got filled up. I was in a good spot. That company that I was with was acquired. My wife was from North Carolina. And so we ended up with our three young children migrating to North Carolina, and I bumped into an orthodontist named Dr. Jerry Clark. I'd spent about, a little bit under 15 years in the orthodontic space, and that's what I was new and what I was comfortable with. Mm-hmm. He had a little company that did valuation and transitions, but not very well. It was kind of an orthodontic hobby business. Yeah. And so I asked him about it. And he said, I think I'm going to shut it down. And I ended up buying that, and that became Benson Koppel Associates. And
okay.
So that's kind of what I've been doing the last 32 years, kind of 15 in practice management. So I'm real comfortable with all the business aspects. I can post a check. I can set up a scheduling template. I know how to do all that. And grew up in that business. And then valuation transitions, recruiting, and now this new OSO space. So it's been fun. I love the orthodontic space.
So it sounds like you've been in business for a little while. So can you just talk a little bit about the company? How does it serve the orthodontic community?
Yeah, we're siloed in orthodontics. We're specialists, if you will, just like they are. 10 people, kind of plus or minus, depending on, the evolution of our business. We're kind of look like an accounting shop. We've got three people who previously were CPA somewhere. We've got one that was previously an attorney somewhere. So it's it's very numbers oriented, detailed business, some financial analysts, and then some recruiting assets. So we just deal with doctors kind of at the beginning of their career and kind of at the end. We do a lot of things like you and I are doing right now for the years in between, just to kind of educate people on things that we know. And we've kind of become known, I guess, in our space as the go-to people for information about, which way the wind is blowing in orthodontics, how hard is it blowing? What do I need to know? So kind of the trend analyzers, I guess, if that's a word.
Okay. So can you just take us kind of loosely through the process of the valuation of a practice and just a few of the criteria that you generally are using to determine this figure?
Yeah. Why would you value a practice? Typically it's because you want to have some kind of change in ownership, right? So a lot of our clients are older, and this is the last, lapse around the track. And so they get the practice valued in preparation or as part of a transition to sell. Some value mid-career because they want to trade time for money, or they want to add a partner because they're growing so fast and so forth. So we'll value that practice. Yeah. And so that's kind of the valuation piece. I mean, we start, with our older clients that want to eventually transition out. We really don't start talking about numbers. We say, listen, are you emotionally ready? What are you going to do when you're not doing this?
That's a good question.
and sometimes that stops the train right there, because you have to be kind of emotionally ready. And then if you are and you have a spouse and they're not, or a partner and they're not, we try to bring them into the discussion pretty early. how do they feel if I'm on the phone with your partner, your spouse, you know, and I say he or she's going to retire, what would they tell me? You know, no way, or, you know, should have done it 5 years ago. So you kind of have to be both on the same page there. Then we have to kind of talk about financially, are you able to, does this complete your financial plan or is it done and this is gravy? Try to understand, you know, what has to happen financially in order to elegantly, you know, kind of get out. And after those two things are in line, it's a fairly mechanical process. You know, we value the practice, just kind of like appraising a house. Then we got to negotiate, you know, with a candidate or several candidates to get to yes. After we get to yes, we got to do legal. And if you can't find somebody in that part in the middle of, you know, who do I negotiate with, we can go find somebody or they have to go find somebody. So
yeah, I was going to ask that. So do you help find a buyer for the practice too?
We can. And that's probably the fastest growing part of our business is recruiting. It's, you know, the desires of the new and younger doctor base are much different today than they were when I got out. I'm not a doctor, but when I got out of school and started working, but, you know, most orthodontists polled, I don't know, 80% 30 years ago, they went to school to become a small business owner. Yes. Almost exclusively. You pull that same resident base today, which there's more of, 67 programs, 380 some graduates, 85% say when they get out, they'd like to work as an employee doctor for a period of time. So very, very different mindset, not as entrepreneurial.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting.
Lots of reasons.
Kind of saddens my heart as an entrepreneur.
Find that, you know, they want to work for a while and 5 years later, you know, they bounce out and they want to be an entrepreneur. They're just not as aggressive right out of school. So
yeah,
as they used to be. You know, school debt has a lot to do with that. You know, I think generationally they're probably healthier than my generation. You know, we just worked and that's what we were wired and taught to do. This generation is much more well-rounded and much more kind of has a global scope of things. And probably healthier people. And the gender mix is a little bit different. So, you know, when you get out of school, you're 30 years old. If you're 30 years old and you're starting your family and you're a guy, it's in many ways, I think, easier than if you're a woman who's got, you know, several children, because still we have a lot of, you know, a lot of the child raising still gets done by the moms, you know, an unequally heavy share does. And so it's hard to dive into a $2 million practice. But they do 5 years later after they get the family started. So that's part of it as well.
You're painting the picture pretty well. I could see the rationale there now.
Yeah, okay. You know, it's hard to talk about because people, you know, you got to be careful, but, you know, it's just true. And so, you know, it's a great specialty. It always will be. And it's changed a lot. Some people put a wet blanket on that and think it's not as good as it used to be. I think it's every bit as good and probably better. Lot more options today, and don't have a negative feeling about it for the future at all.
Okay. Are there any hidden costs that have to be considered
in the valuation process?
Yeah,
not really. I mean, if you want to think about gotchas, you know, this is a really a data-driven project, and so, you know, kind of the mantra from our company is facts are friendly. You know, this is a very emotional transaction for both the buyer and the seller, right? The seller almost always thinks his or her practice is worth more than it is. Almost always thinks they're paying more than, you know, market value or that they should be. Somewhere in between is the truth. I mean, we tell, you know, our clients, you know, in this negotiation process, when the volume gets the loudest and both sides are screaming, I can't take it anymore, we're likely in the fairest spot of the deal. And so what we try to do is, you know, rely on the facts of the business because they're pretty cut and dry. And so the gotchas are, we don't have good facts. The gotchas are, we'll do this on a handshake. You know, there's a lot of, you know, parent-child relationships out there, about 10% of orthodontists is kind of legacy. And a lot of those go really great, but a larger percentage than you might think go really bad because it's just get out of school. We'll figure out our business relationship when you get home and into the practice with the parent. And then, yeah, spouses involved, not everything's communicated clearly. you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas can get pretty tense. And so, you know, we just think good communication with everybody involved in the transaction that's a stakeholder is key. Good data is key. And then, you know, trying to do this without expert help when it's something you only do, you know, maybe two times per career, yes, we think is a bad idea, but, you know,
I agree.
So you need, you know, you need a CPA to sign your tax return. You need a group to help you analyze this transaction if you're a buyer, and structure it if you're a seller, and you have to be reasonable. So, you know, some deals die because people aren't reasonable, or one side doesn't have, you know, skilled advisors on their side. But those are the gotchas. And if you don't have good data, then that makes deals hard to do. And so, you know, some practices don't.
I mean, what are the main characteristics of a practice that are going to affect the value up or down? Is it just assets they own and number of patients, or?
It's a great question, because, you know, if you go into almost any orthodontic office in my position, you know, most orthodontists just want to talk about how much they collected last year, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of orthodontists have a sheet of paper or a stack of post-it notes or some fairly arcane way of tracking this, but there's great pride in. I've never had a down year, you know, in 25 years, and my revenue's always gone up, which is great. And so, you know, there's a lot of emphasis put on revenue, I think, in the uneducated, the more naive folks that really haven't not a great understanding of what makes a practice value, because it's really profit. And so, you know, we find, you know, you can have two practices both doing $2 million a year, and one will value at 95% of, you know, prior collections as a measuring stick, and one will value at, you know, 60. And it's because of the amount of money that it throws off to the owner. So our job when we value a practice is to identify what it really costs to turn the lights on, pay the people, pay the rent, you know, buy the supplies, you know, make the phone ring, and run the business. And then, you know, when we know that, we know how much it throws off to the owner. And then we use a capitalized income approach, which is a fancy accounting word of basically be a multiplier of profit to determine the value of a practice. So value of a practice is primarily determined by the amount of income it throws off to the owner.
That makes sense. What is the branding make any difference? You know, the condition of the building, everything in there, the website, the collateral, just its general perception in the community. Like if it looks like it's a 50-year-old practice versus if it looks like everything's been refreshed and new. And
it does. Yeah. You know, there's an analytical value that you can put to, the fixed assets and service. And so when you think about what are the fixed assets and service in an orthodontic office, you know, all the stuff that you could back up a truck in the middle of the night and put in it and drive away with, you know,
yeah, okay.
That's worth
something.
That's
a good way to put it. Sure.
Right. And so you got chairs and you got computers and you got radiography equipment and you got scanners and you've got an inventory and of hand pieces and brackets and wires and gloves and all that kind of stuff has a value that's fairly easy to determine. And, you know, then in orthodontics, to your question, you know, there's all this intangible value because we have in orthodontics what we don't have in any other specialty of dentistry, which is this thing called contract receivable. You know, I've got this giant number in my practice of money that people have signed up to pay me, but I can't collect any of it now until they keep coming in for the next several years in most cases, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so that has a value. And then, you know, I've got the doctor's reputation, the competitive environment, you know, the location of the building. And so to your point, branding, it's this intangible value. But when you look at how the government looks at this transaction, and they're very interested, by the way.
I'm sure they
wanna,
are. Yeah.
They want to collect some money. You know, they say, well, you bought this $2 million practice for $1.8 million. What did you buy? And so you have to take the 1.8 million from an accounting standpoint. You have to, I describe it as buckets to folks that aren't accountants, but you have to divide the 1.8 million and you say, well, you know, the stuff is worth 400,000 and, you know, stuff that you could drive away, the fixed assets. And then the contract receivable balance is $1 million, but it takes 50% overhead to produce that. So that's 500,000. And then we have an allocation for bad debt. So that's maybe another 30,000. Then we've got to pay an orthodontist, collect $1 million. So that's 350,000. So that $1 million is really only worth about 250,000. And then in the transaction, and then we've got, you know, the stuff, and then, you know, I'm going to buy a covenant not to compete, you know, from you, and that's worth $10,000. And you got this giant number in this transaction, 700,000, 800,000, 900,000. Yeah. What bucket do I put that in? Well, the IRS says that's called goodwill. And that's your reputation. That's your branding. That's
so it's extremely important.
So that's what you're really buying is, yeah, is this, you know, goodwill. And this is why this word transition is such a accurate name for this transaction, because, yeah, you know, in dentistry, sometimes because it's a production-based business, you know, you filled a cavity, you got paid, you put on a crown, you got paid. The retiring dentist can actually be walking out the back door as the new dentist is walking in the front door, right? Because just it's a production-based, you know, kind of relationship. In orthodontics, we have these two-year relationships, and then we've got, you know, sometimes before they even start, they've been in supervision, you know, for several years. And then after they get debonded, they're in, you know, retention treatment for several years. And it's just a just big, long relationship that we have with just one patient. And we can have two or three of those with one family, and then they're friends and so forth. So it's very common in a $2 million practice that I work with the doctor that buys my practice for a year or more, because the trust they have in me, that 80% that I got to put in that goodwill bucket, has to be transferred successfully from me to you as the buyer. And that takes time.
And that makes sense.
I, as a seller, get lower tax treatment on that bucket than anything else. Everything else is ordinary income, but that's long-term capital gains treatment for me. So,
Okay.
The government, you know, recognizes it as an asset, and it needs to be transferred, and that takes time. And so I'm supposed to say, when you're next to me in the chair, you're bigger, better, faster, stronger, smarter, you know, can't believe you turned over your rock and we got you to come to our practice. And that's supposed to set enough times, in a sense, transfer the trust that patient, their parents, the community, the referrals has in me to you. So that when I leave, they say, yeah, I'm in good hands. Branding is very important.
So can you just walk us through the transitioning of an ortho practice? What does it look like?
Yeah. So let's just say I'm 60 years old. I'm 5 years away. You know, I heard Chris speak at some meeting or on this podcast, and I call him up and I say, I think I want to retire when I'm 65. So I'll go through the first thing about, you know, what do I do? How does this work? I'll say, well, you know, on a 1 to 10 happiness scale, with 10 being I'm thrilled on Thursday afternoon and 1 being, you know, ready to put a fork in my head, you know, where are you on Thursday afternoon right now from a happiness level? And that may give me some kind of gauge of just kind of, you know, that emotional component of how ready are you not to do this? Orthodontics is pretty cool in that there's a lot of technology that's come along the way in the last 20 years that if my hands and my eyes aren't as good as they were when I'm 30, there's technology that can, you know, accommodate for that. And I can practice into my 70s, well into my 70s if I want to now. So it's just, you know, emotionally, how are you doing? You know, financially, how are you doing? Do you need to save a bunch of money in the next 5 years? Or are you ready to do this now if we trip over the right person? And then how long does this take? You know, it takes a minimum of 6 months for my shop, typically, to get this project done if everything was perfect. So it takes me about 90 days to send you a homework assignment, to send me a bunch of numbers that I can have my team kind of organize into meaningful view for a transition or evaluation. Then I need to come to your office. I need to trust and verify and kick the tires. You know, is this stuff that you say is in your office really there? And then I'd like to take a look around and say, who else is around here doing what you do? And where are your referrals? And where are the schools? And if I have a 30-year-old that wants to move to this town, or 30-something, where would he or she live? And how much would a house cost? And so, you know, what does that environment look like? Mm-hmm. So that's a 90-day kind of project. Then I have a book on the practice that I could show to somebody And if I have somebody to show it to, hopefully I have more than one, you know, but maybe I only have one, but you know, then I got to go through that. And we just represent one side of the transaction unless you're related. And so I'm advising for the seller in this case, and they've got to get an advisor. So, you know, we got to go back and forth because almost every deal point, what's good for the seller is not as good for the buyer and vice versa. So there's some natural conflict in this transaction that has to be worked through. And then, you know, we get to yes on that. And then we got to look at real estate matters. Do you own the building? Do you want to sell it to me? Is it leased? Can I get a lease? So we have to work through those kinds of things. Then after we agree on all that, you've got to go to a bank and say, I need $1 million and I've got $1 million in school debt. Where does that happen? And how does that happen? Does the seller have to be involved in that financing at all? And so we've got to work out those pieces. Finally, those pieces are all worked out. And now an attorney kind of has a mini book, you know, 15 pages of what we've agreed on that he turns into 80.
I'm surprised you can get that down to 15 pages. Yeah. Okay.
that makes the legal documents work. Yeah. And, you know, then we kind of wait for the closing. And, you know, it's interesting to go through all this and you spend some money and you can actually close this, you know, over, you know, at your kitchen table. You don't have to be in a boardroom. You don't have to have it notarized. Wow. You know, you just sign some stuff, fax them in, Here's the keys. And it's done. And so it's interesting. So
that's got to be a very emotional moment when all that's happening, literally hand the keys over.
You know, Orthodontists tell us, you know, why we poll the residents, you know, why did you want to do, you know, why did you want to go to school for 30 years and go through, you know, not only 4 years of undergrad, but 4 years of dental school and then 2 or 3 years of a specialty training. Why did you want to have on average $600,000 in school debt? And they say, you know, they want to make a difference in people's lives is the number one answer by far over anything.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And that's what's fun about this job. It's, you know, I tell people what I do. It's kind of weird. You know, how'd you get in that? You know, wasn't really, you know, you didn't wake up and go to college and say, this is what I want to do, but it kind of just happened, you know, that way for me. But, you know, that satisfaction of seeing that transaction happen and the baton being passed successfully from one generation to the next is quite satisfying for us. And that's one reason we enjoy it so much.
Wow, that sounds it sounds pretty amazing, actually. Yeah. All right. So the doctors, when they do sell, do they ever just stay on as an employee or do they always generally just leave?
Yeah. You know, almost always there's that period of working together. So historically it was the young doctor coming in, worked for a while. And then it was very elegant to say he or she is so darn good and I'm ready to go. So I'm passing the baton to, you know,
yes,
Richie. And you know, so we still do a lot of deals like that where there's that time working together. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if I'm 60, 65, and it's harder today to find a buyer in most geographic environments than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, I'll sell the whole practice to you day one, but then you'll hire me back as a reverse associate for a year or two. For a scheduled predetermined period of time. And so we still have that time working together, but the ownership transferred right away. That's to protect the older doctor from you not executing.
Absolutely. I would probably prefer it.
When you buy a new car, you know, the week after you're going, man, should I really spend all this money? You know, then there's that kind of, you know, it always happens. There's that kind of buyer's remorse time period. And, you know, and you can risk, you know, losing somebody. And then you have introduced this doctor to your team, to your patients, to the community. And 6 months later, they're gone because they didn't want to go through with the deal. That, yeah. You know, and then I have to do that again.
Exactly.
And then I've got to not only answer all the questions from those people, but I got to answer the question from this candidate. Hey, why didn't it work with Chris? You know, so what's wrong with you?
Oh gosh.
So, you know, to avoid that, you know, we do it, but I, to answer your question, almost always there's this time of working together, how it's structured varies. And then there's this whole partnerships are, you know, just a different breed and different animals. That's where most of the ugly stories are is, you know, partnerships gone awry and they go awry kind of, you know, not at the same pace, but, you know, in the same ways that, you know, that kind of personal relationships don't work out. You know, usually it's around control, it's around money, it's around communication. And that's the reasons partnerships typically don't last if they don't. But those are the most of the ugly stories in Orthodox are around partnerships that dissolved.
That makes sense. All right. So let's say they're not retiring, we're not getting rid of a partner, but they're growing. I need some help. Let's take on a partner. What does that look like?
Yeah, you know, partnerships are just, it's a longer process because you really are getting married business-wise to another person. So you need to be compatible. And then if both partners have, you know, a spouse or a partner, you know, we really think they should be included in the mix and at least understand how the numbers are going to flow. Because a lot of times the doctors that are working together can get along quite fine. But if you're going home, and that hasn't been explained clearly because either you didn't know how to, or you didn't understand it, or they weren't part of the process, it can start to cause some friction at home that you end up taking to the business later. So we try to include everybody.
That's interesting. Yes.
In the deal, make sure that everybody, and then when you have a partnership, you have to consider, we say, you know, the three tenets of a good partnership, or, you know, how do I get in it? How do I act when I'm in it, which is around governance and compensation? And then how do I get out of it? If all those three items are clearly defined and spelled out in the framework of the partnership, we have a pretty good chance of that being a positive partnership. But you have to. But when you're considering how do I get out of it, you have to consider ugly things. Mm. Okay. The most common was because we have a generational difference. I'm 60, you're 40. What happens if I become disabled, if I die, how do you get my half of the practice back? So my estate can get whole. So my wife's cool. And then you can get half the practice back. So you now own it and you can have something to sell. So that's done with, in business, you'll hear the term key man insurance in this transaction. It's a buy sell agreement, which is basically handled with most cases with cross insurance on each other, where you have a policy on me, I have one on you. And if something happens to one of us, it's the policy value is worth half the practice, half the business. Yeah. And so you get a check for half the business. So that's how you get my half back. And then you pay that to my estate. So my wife is cool in my situation. So she got paid for half the business. You didn't have to go to the bank. It was handled by insurance. And now you own 100% of the practice and you can bring another partner in. So you have to.
Oh, that's a good, I've never heard of this method of doing it. That's a good idea.
Okay. So the legal documents are thicker, right? Because, then you have to say, well, you know, what if one of us gets divorced and, you know, the doctor wants to move to Tahiti because he or she has fallen in love with an orthodontist there, you know?
Yeah.
That can happen. What if you just want to break up because you're not getting along? We're involved in several of those at the moment. And, so there needs to be a method by which you can contemplate, you know, good things happening and bad things. And then ultimately, if nothing bad happens, we work together for 20 years plus or minus. And then the document needs to speak to, okay, how do I get out? You go to the document, you haven't read it in 20 years. And it says, okay, it says we're supposed to get evaluation and then you're supposed to go to the bank and you're supposed to pay me for half of it. And then you can hire me back for up to a year. I need to give you a year's notice and it'll explain how that transaction is supposed to go down. And so, that's kind of the Bible is if it's done well. And that's what we kind of pride ourselves in partnerships. I mean, when you look at the breakdown of 10,000 orthodontists, you know, 60-some% are solo practitioners, so they don't have to mess with partnerships. About 20% right now and growing are in partnerships. So it's a smaller number, but we have to do those right. And we think if you structure them correctly, if you handle how do I get into it, which is about payment and price and tax effects, and you know you want to drive a Ferrari, but I want to drive a Buick because you know we got age differences and debt differences. You know we got to be able to true those kinds of things up. You want to run season tickets for a sports team through, but I don't care about basketball, but I do care about whatever. You got to figure out all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of work to a partnership that you don't have in a solo practitioner, but done well, they're quite successful. And we're seeing more and more of them.
Do you see more partners being added or more just hiring another doctor as an employee?
The latter, more the doctors being added as employees, because, you know, when we look at corporate dentistry, which is just blowing up right now, what we see is, you know, most practices have more than one location to practice in. But if you think about it, if I'm a solo practitioner, I've got assets in this satellite office that sit fallow, usually 4 days a week, right? Because I usually only go there 1 day a week.
Absolutely.
And so what corporate can do better than us, if we're solo or even small groups, is they can exploit those assets and get more out of them. So I can get a better return on them because I can be open in two places on the same day for, you know, all week if I want to. And so we're seeing the model of spreading your footprint for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, I may have a rooftop problem when there's just so many rooftops around this location that's convenient. And, you know, that's because this office has been here for 40 years, but now the cool part of town is actually over here. So, you know, let me build an office over here where all the families are with 2.3 kids. And that office over time will actually exceed, you know, this traditional bigger office. And so, you know, there's a lot of dynamics. We could be on this webinar for hours and really have a lot of fun talking about what's going on out there. But, you know, to answer your question, we're hiring more employee doctors now than ever before. And that's because we're seeing bigger footprints and kind of an expansion of small group practices, which is usually two owners and then multiple doctors.
To compete against the corporate.
Yeah.
I gotcha. I was reading that you guys don't use a comparative market value approach. So how is that different than what you do? Is that true?
That is true. I mean, we would describe a comparative market value approach as, you know, let's find 10 transactions in this geography that look similar and let's, you know, see what the average of those deals are.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, there is 10,000 orthodontists, but there's only about 7,800 practices when you have, you know, the solo practitioners, the small group practitioners, and then everybody else is either in corporate or, you know, working for a pedo or working for an ortho. So there's a finite number across 50 states and maybe, you know, the provinces. There's almost never, you know, more than two transactions that have been done in, you know, the last two or three years in the same town. And so you don't have this ability to compare to stuff.
It's not like buying or selling a house. It's not really.
Right. We just don't have that volume. And the analysis that we do is, you know, this really is as much science as art in the valuation side. We sign our valuations as CVAs because Doug Koppel, my business partner, is a CVA, Certified Valuation Analyst. That's the equivalent of a CPA signing your tax return. And so you have to go to school. You have to take, you know, educational hours every year to maintain that equivalency and those initials. And then on my team of 10, you know, I've got three people that practice as CPAs in their prior life. One was an attorney in their prior life. These are very professional deals. And so you follow essentially an accounting set of guidelines to determine a capitalized income approach value of your practice. And so, you know, we're the one of the few, not the only ones, but we're one of the few that have that designation that do that. What we find is when our transactions get put to the test from the other side, you know, the advisors on the other side usually say, gosh, this was really well done. I don't really have a debate here. And we find that the value that we determine is rarely moves unless we're coached to move it for reasons outside that are the desires of our client. And so, you know, a market analysis is really hard to do in ortho. It's almost never done. There's some firms that play around with it. We probably have more data and more orthodontic deals than anybody in the world. And we don't do it. We don't do it because we don't think it's the most effective way to derive value, because it's just comparing similar looking deals. And there's just no two that look alike. You know, you can have $3 million practices that look alike on the top, but they can be 50%, 60% and 70% overheads. And so when you're doing analysis, what data do you need? And you can
that
still
makes
have
it very
a higher...
clear when you say it like that, because you're saying profit is so important in the valuation. Okay.
Yeah. So that's why. So it's a process that needs to be taken seriously. It's a big deal. I mean, besides, you know, when you think about what you buy in your lifetime, you're going to buy a home to live in. You might buy a second home if you're an orthodontist. You might buy an airplane. But if you buy a practice, this is going to be probably worth more than your house. It's probably going to throw off more income than, you know, you can ever imagine. And so it needs to be done well, and you need to pay somebody to help you through that process, in our opinion.
So if you're the buyer and you're, how do you know if what you're buying is worth what they're saying? It's because your team on your side is just experienced and know what they're doing. Is that really the best way to know?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, there's an accounting, you know, model called a cash flow pro forma, fancy word for show me if I do this deal, what my life might look like over the next 10 years with debt, principal, and taxes thrown in. So anytime that we're involved in a transaction, particularly a partnership transaction, where we have to show the doctor that's our client how their income is going to be affected when they bring this new, you know, set of hands into their world. And then we have to show the new doctor what their income possibilities are in this, you know, relationship with two doctors. We do a 10-year cash flow pro forma that's tax affected. What does that mean? Well, we know what the collections are. We know what the overhead is. So we know what the profit is of the practice after we take out all the goodies, right?
Yes, yes.
And so then we have to say, here's the comp plan. And there's, you know, that's a science as well as an art, but probably more of a science. And so here's how we're going to pay you to. Sometimes there's a differential in the early years. Sometimes there's not. And then here's what's left over. Now, your tax situation, Dr. Seller, is going to be this. Overlay that. Your tax situation, Dr. Buyer, is going to be this. Overlay that. And then what's left at the bottom is, this is how much money you're going to have to spend on you. So you got to overlay your life spending habits. Plus, if you're young, your school debt, does this work? And so if you don't have that tool, to your question, you can't make a decision about whether it's wise for you. And so, you know, this is the first document you sit across the dinner table and say, babe, if we do this, this is what they're telling me it's going to look like. And it can't be built on the practice growing 10% year over year for 10 years. We don't see that. And so we do very conservative growth methods. And we always get asked, well, what if it looks better if we outdo this growth? I said, yeah, it would. But this is fee increase growth, 2.5-3% a year is typically how we build these for 10 years out. And they'll go, well, it's going to grow a lot bigger if I bring Chris in because he's young and energetic. And, you know, we're going to grow 10%. I said, well, let's plan on it not growing 10%. And then if you do, these numbers just get prettier. So, you know, some conservative thought and some discussion, but the cash flow pro forma, if you're listening to this webinar, is the takeaway. That's the term you need to use with your accountant or your advisor is do me a 10-year cash flow pro forma. They all know how to do these. And show me what my net after-tax income is going to be if I do this deal. And it needs to be after tax. When we're young, we're a little bit naive because we haven't paid taxes. We haven't made big money before. Yes. And so we just look at that gross number. You say, well, I'm making $300,000. Well, you know, after the government gets their piece of that, you really only got $220,000. So, and then you got school debt and all these other things. So tax affected cash flow perform is important.
Yeah, I think I might talk to my accountant about that. Anyway, so let's say you are thinking about retiring. Is it 5 years out, maybe? Are there some actionable items you should take now to make that number, you know, 5 years from now as high as possible so that you're kind of getting the most money you can out of the practice? Do you need more than 5 years? Do you need less than 5 years? Like, what is a good time to start planning on that? You know, what can you do?
You know, I spend most of my time on the telephone talking to doctors, and that these are the kinds of discussions we have. You know, I think I'm 5 years out. Do I need to do anything with you right now? You know, if I want to raise my value, what do I do? And you know, again, it's just it's a lot of listening on our end about where you are, what you want, how you want to go out. You know, I call these blue sky meetings. Because I'll just say, let's pretend you get to do it exactly how you think it should go. What does that look like to you? And they'll describe that. And, you know, I'll give them some feedback, whether that's realistic or not. I'll try to understand kind of where they are. I'm not a financial planner. I don't need to get into the weeds of how much money do you have, but I'll try to understand what their needs are there. try to understand this happiness scale and things like that. And then if we decide that, yeah, we try to solve for getting the most because this is going to finish out my retirement account. What do I need to do? Well, you need to grow. Growth is super hard up until COVID. That's a weird thing to say, right? But, we were only growing the decade before COVID until, 2019 was a great year. But until 2019, we were growing at 2% depending on the year, sometimes less, sometimes a titch more, but plus or minus 2%. So, kind of inflation growth. Not even fee increase.
Oh yeah, really? That is inflation growth. That really doesn't even count, does it?
Not even fee increase growth. So we weren't really growing. And then COVID hit. We all thought the world was going to end, and then things opened back up. And for orthodontists, it was just an unbelievable run the last 20 months. So right now, everybody's exhausted. Everybody's been working like crazy. We've gone through the PPP and the PPE and now we've got these labor problems, and you've got several webinars on that. People should listen to those questions that you've asked on different guests on labor. That's another one that we could talk about for a long time. But I think as I look forward from today, I'm not super bullish about where we're going economically in the United States, anyways. And I think things are going to begin to get tighter. And we started hearing this in July of 2021. Hey, the phone's not ringing as much. August, the same thing. September, the same thing. October, the same thing. And so we're kind of slowing down. The growth is slowing down from where it was as when we bounced out. So I think it's going to be hard to grow. So, if you want to grow and you're paying attention, what are we hearing? We're hearing that the consumer is super concerned about several things. One is, safety of their kids and of themselves. So that means the fewer times they can visit to your office, probably the better in their mind. They're super concerned about convenience. You have ER doctors signing up for Smile Direct Club because, Adam Shuloff talked about this on your webinar, about grins, because just thought with my crazy schedule, this would be the best choice for me. And I'm a doctor, for heaven's sake. So we got to communicate to that cadre of consumers. We've got to treat adults. That's where all the growth has been in the last 13 years. And there's a big growth contingent in that. There's a big retreat contingent that we've got to get better with that's going to handle growth. We've got to go digital. We're one out of four cases in aligners right now. And then if you look at where's the money flowing from a capital perspective in orthodontics right now, I think this week or a couple of weeks ago, Dental Monitoring closed $150 million. Thanks. You've had Philippe on.
Yesterday,
Alfred Griffin closed a $50 million round with Lightforce. You've got KL Owen. Brandon's going to be going after some money. He's going to get it. These are all digital customized braces applications and remote monitoring applications. Rhinogram, you could throw in there. They've gotten some money. Smile Snaps, those kinds of companies. And then you see the massive amount of money that is in the aligner world. And you just look at the juggernaut, which is Invisalign, a great company. I mean, they've got, $4 billion in sales and a $54 billion market cap. They don't have anything in the world in orthodontics that approaches that kind of scale and size. And they've got, a billion and change, I think, or something like that in cash. So, it's just we've got products and we've got a consumer that wants to be digital, So if I'm setting up an office with my kid and my kid says, Dad, I want to be an orthodontist. I said, get through ortho school. We're going to buy something. We're going to start from scratch and we're going to be heavy digital. I could see the time 20 years from now when do braces go away? No, but mass customized digital braces options will be the norm. Those will come with a lab fee. So we're going to have a smaller footprint of this office. We can do this in 2,500 square feet instead of 3,545 to save on some occupancy costs. We're going to have kind of a digital guru staff person that helps us with ClinChecks and the remote monitoring items that are out there. And we're going to grow like crazy. And we're going to talk to adults and we're going to talk to retreats and we're going to do great with kids. And, you just have to pay attention.
As you say this, I think of my most you know, my most profitable clients. I'm like, wait, they're doing the majority of the things you just described right now. And if you're not doing a lot of those things, it's, you know, I think you really do need to start playing catch up, because it's, you can't get left behind. It's changing so fast.
But a lot of people in the transition world that I live in are, you know, hey, Chris, I'm 60. I'm not going to do that. And I don't suggest that they do that.
Mm.
And so, you know, on that happiness thing, I say, listen, just spend money on, if you want it to finish out your career, if you want a laser, go buy a laser. But if you want a cone beam and you got 5 years left, I'm like, you know what? I think you missed the cone beam time. Don't do that unless you're just loaded, right? I mean, because, you know, you're spend 130 to 150,000, whatever those are right now. You know, maybe that's not a wise investment. It's not like a kitchen where dollar for dollar you're going to get out, you know, that remodel money. So, you know, it's good, but you gotta be smarter today. And I think, you know, the biggest advice I would give a young doctor, mid-career doctor, even heading into how can my practice be the best it can be for full valuation, you need a Sherpa. You know, I talk about this a lot. I'm not in the back pockets of any practice consultant, but there's about 60 of them in ortho that everybody's heard from the podiums. And you guys are one, really. I mean, in a sense, you're consultants, and you can go into a practice and you can make it perform at a higher level. And you ask yourself, why don't people use you more? You know, you've got the data that shows if you spend money with me, your practice is going to go up and be healthier.
Well, you know, marketing is better. A dirty word, I think, in a lot of cases, you know, it's like, it should be a return on investment, but it's, you know, people have they're jaded, I think.
Yeah, it's hard. So you gotta get around that value proposition is your biggest hurdle. But, you know, I tell people, listen, you know, if you went to Everest today, if you went to base camp at Mount Everest and you said, I'm here to climb to the summit, they would send you home because they would say, where's your Sherpa? You say, I don't have one. And they would say, well, we've made a law, and they did this about 5 years ago, that says you cannot go to the summit without a Sherpa. Why? Because there's too many business casualties. There's too many casualties on the mountain. Too many people get hurt. Too many people die. So you have to have someone to show you how to do it so we don't have all these casualties. And the same way in business. So, you know, you look around at the practices that do the best. You just described it yourself. My clients, that when I think about what I'm talking about to grow, they're doing these things, you know, what, so you need more clients, right? And that'll be healthier practices, and that'll be higher values for these practices, but we don't do that. The data is very clear that only 25% of people ever pay you money to help make the practice bigger, any consultant. And that really baffles me. And I think that's something that we need to knock down, and people, you know, I'm not saying just willy-nilly go hire people just because Chris said to, but
oh no,
I can tell you,
of course not.
I can tell you that, you know, when we value practices and we find that you're in there, or many of the guests on your shows that have been in there, I had Leanne on not too long ago for your 50th show or something like that. And some other folks, when they're in there, and when you look at the numbers, they all outperform their peers in almost every measurable operational and financial metric. So, you know, a big takeaway from this, if you're listening, is, you know, you can't do this all by yourself. You're smart, but you're not smart enough to do this by yourself. You need somebody to hold your hand. And if they're not working out for you, get another one. But the money that you pay them, it gets returned many, many fold what you spend in almost every case.
I agree. Well, of course I agree, but the numbers are really what matter. You know, we used to say when I was an analyst in aerospace, show me the data. That's really what matters, isn't it?
Yeah. Facts are friendly.
All right. So if someone is interested in talking with you, what should they do? How should they reach out to you?
I have conversations just like we're having right now. When I'm in the office all day long. So look us up on the web. We're BensonCoppel.com. My name's spelled really weird. It's got a T in it, BENTSONCOPPLE.com. And then 1-800-621-4664. You can look this up and dial us up and just get put on my schedule. These don't cost you anything. We do a lot of discussions. If there's a product that comes out of it, you'll decide if that's right for you or not. But thanks for disseminating great information. Thanks for having me today. It's been a blast.
Yeah, I've had a great time. Is there anything else you want to cover before we wrap it up?
You know, if you give me a second, that I just would promote a meeting that's coming up sponsored by the AAO in January in Orlando. It's the AAO winter meeting. Had the good fortune to work as a, program vice chair, or however you want to say that, with Dwayne McCamish and Daniel Keith. And it's on practice modalities. I mean, today there are so many different ways to practice, and you can kind of pivot early in your career, mid-career, late career, whether that means an OSO or working with a pedo or joining up with other orthodontists, expanding your footprint. We're going to have examples of people that have practiced like that in different ways. And I think it's going to be one of the first face-to-face meetings that we've had with the AAO in 2 years. There's also a virtual component to it. So if you're not comfortable coming to Orlando in January or can't, you can hit that virtually. But I'd include you to sign up for that. OSO's leadership will be there and so forth. And I would just end with, there's a lot of change in dentistry. There's a lot of change in the specialty of ortho. I think the future has never been brighter for an orthodontist. You have modalities to practice in that you couldn't have dreamed of or didn't exist 10 years ago. There's great income opportunities across the board. You can make as much or really modify your schedule to work as much or as little as you want and make great money. And you can change people's lives for your whole career. So that's what this thing's about. And I'm not afraid that the specialty is in any way going in a negative direction.
Well, that's great to hear, especially when you're seeing the numbers. Well, Chris, it's been great having you on the show. Thanks a lot, and I hope to see you soon.
Thanks so much, Rich.
There are a lot of reasons you need to find the value of your practice. Are you retiring? Are you bringing on a partner? Are you getting rid of a partner? Whenever you're having these big transitions, you need to find out the value so that you can make this transition happen smoothly. And Chris really did a great job of explaining when you need to get that valuation, what the process looks like, and how you can really move forward and make sure that it works with the future you want for yourself. If you want to be a guest on the show or have an idea for guests, go to orthothrive.com. You can reach me at richard@orthosalesengine.com. Keep grinding, keep thriving, and I'll see you next time.